This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile. Glad to have you along. Hey, heads up here, too. Just saw this. I got to find it. I saw it and then it escaped me. There it is. From the Twitter feed from my buddy Bob Gripp. Is he has the busiest retirement of anybody I've ever seen, which we appreciate, Bob. But he put this up from folks at Infirmary Health. Says, for patients showing signs of COVID-19, Infirmary Health will host appointment-only drive-through testing sites tomorrow through Wednesday, April 15th. Site locations vary by day, but will cover Mobile and Baldwin counties. So, once again, Infirmary Health is doing this starting tomorrow going through the 15th of April. I don't know the hours, but it's appointment only, so they'd probably tell you. It's appointment only, but drive-through testing. To schedule an appointment to be tested, please call Infirmary Health COVID-19 testing hotline, 341-2819, 341-2819. A hotline is open from 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. Bob also added here, appointments are limited, and the registered nurse performing the initial screening on the phone will be determining whether patients need to be tested for COVID-19 based on the CDC criteria. So that's going on, and that phone number, if you're riding down the road, there's no way. Maybe you have a memory like a steel trap, and you can hold on to 341-2819. If not, if you'll just Google Infirmary Health COVID-19 hotline, you'll get the information right there. All right, I mentioned we check in with State Senator Chris Elliott, who is you're sheltering at home, right?
I am indeed, working from home, thankful for a good, fast internet connection, which I know you and I both value.
That is for sure. And I like the fact, y'all, I'll just pull back the curtain here on our text conversation earlier. Chris was saying that his children are probably happy he's getting to talk with me because he's not watching over them for a couple minutes. They get some freedom, right?
They used to get upset when I got on the phone. Now they're like, will somebody please call him? So they're looking for a break from dad teaching them things that they may not be used to being learned.
They're getting some at-home learning for sure. Give us some over-the-radio education here on this as well. With y'all gaveled out, and I kind of go back, actually, and the whole process of gaveling back in the other day to set a date certain to gavel back in, right? I mean, folks had to go back up to Goat Hill to set a new date to come back to see if you're going to gavel in.
That's correct. And essentially what that was a rule change that allowed during a state of emergency for the legislature to be out of session without burning legislative days. So once we gavel in, we have a certain amount of days that we have to get through the session in, and if we don't, then we're done at the end of that amount. And what the goal was to try not to burn those days if we didn't have to. Now, we still have to get out by the middle of May. That clock doesn't start. But when we talk about being in session, Sean, you know, I've talked to this before, usually in session on a Tuesday and a Thursday in the chamber. Well, there's still an awful lot of work that happens. As a matter of fact, most of the work, the majority of the work happens outside of the actual chamber when we're in committee and other meetings, subcommittees, trying to work on different pieces of legislation. So we're not in there voting on things right now, but make no mistake, there is a fury of activity going on. It's just going on with a lot of people that probably aren't wearing socks right now.
Okay, and that activity, is it working on the subjects we talked most about before? Is it the medical marijuana bill or prisons or lottery, or is it about how we're going to make ends meet with state budgets?
That's a good question, and I think the answer to that is, if it is what I would kind of call a small potatoes bill, then it's not being discussed, and it probably won't see any chance of moving forward in this legislative session. If it is something that is more overarching and overreaching, for instance, prisons, then yes, those conversations are happening right now. Budget conversations are happening right now. And then, of course, as the Lieutenant Governor mentioned earlier, lots of conversations about how do we help small businesses? You know, I'm working on a bill right now that will help small businesses from a tax standpoint. It will help individuals from a tax standpoint to make sure, get this, on your federal government stimulus check isn't taxed by the state of Alabama, because it otherwise would be.
Well, we're working on those types of things. Well, okay, because, you know, there's been a lot of questions that said, hey, will we be taxed on the amount of money we're getting, you know, for the one-time check or other things from the feds? But I hadn't thought about the question on the state. So you're saying without a bill here, the state would be claiming a portion of that federal money that's coming in stimulus?
That's correct. So without the legislation that I'm proposing right now, I'm working on and have good support for, thankfully, that would be subject to state of Alabama income tax. And, you know, obviously, that's not something we want to do. The whole point of the stimulus is to try to get money in people's pockets to keep them going. Well, the last thing we want is a tax liability at the end of the year, certainly for individuals and, in my opinion, for businesses as well.
No joke. How are y'all discussing the fact that you're, when you look at working on tax policy, and doing that for small businesses, let's say it was sales tax or some kind of abatement. I thought about this when the lieutenant governor mentioned it. It's dangerous because that's the revenue source for a lot of what comes into portions one side of the wall of state government, right? You want the businesses to be back open and working, but you sure as heck need that sales tax revenue to come back in for the next fiscal year.
You're absolutely right, and that is the balancing act. And, you know, as I told some of my colleagues, we have a conference call pretty regularly. I told them, I said, guys, now's the time to get your principles out. So you got to decide, hey, am I going to be on the side of government having what it needs in order to make it, or am I going to be on the side of making sure my small businesses and the individuals that I represent have what they need to make it? And I think you can tell from how I'm asking that question, I'm in favor of the small businesses and the individuals having their money to do what they need to do to keep our economy going. The economy, you know, while the government spends money, that's not what drives our economy. Small businesses, individual investment drive our economy, and that's who I want to make sure makes it. And if the government has cut back in the meantime, so be it.
Yeah, it's a tough thing, though. You're talking about cut back in government, because I look at the days of proration, which drives me nuts. The idea, and maybe there's a different version of it, but the way I remember it, it would be across the board cuts to all departments being the same. And to me, I don't value all parts of state government at the same level. I think there are some that are rank higher. There's a real triage list. I think if you ask most Alabamians, they would agree.
You are correct. And I will say that I do not anticipate that's what we're going to have right now. So let's go back and talk about fiscal years and when the the government starts its fiscal years in October, so we got a couple of months there before we even hit the new year, and then going up through really the end of March before this started having a financial impact on revenues. We were going like gangbusters, right? We had money coming in hand over fist. You know, the general fund was up, the education trust fund was up $500 million, this is projections, for just this year alone, up $500 million. So we had a great first half of the year. Now the question is going to be, how can we make it through the rest of the year? How deep is this hole? How big is this cliff? And how long are we there? When does it come back?
Right.
And I think that what we will see is in the next couple of weeks, this is going to move along. We're going to get back to normal. I think by the middle of May for certain, if not, a little bit, maybe the late May before we can call it normal again. But I think you're going to see this trend come back if we do what we're supposed to be doing, which is practicing the social distancing and really kind of squash this transmission of this bug. And if that happens, I think that the early gains that we made during this year from a revenue standpoint will be more than enough to keep us from having to get into prohibition.
All right, coming right back, more with State Senator Chris Elliott. Want to talk more about this. Also, any other discussion of what might be plugging any budget shortfall out there outside of current revenue streams? Yeah, of course. I mean, that's a euphemism for lotto, isn't it? All right, we'll talk about that when we get back.
You're listening. listening to Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5. Call Sean now at 343-0106.
All right, welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile. Our guest, State Senator Chris Elliott, talking about revenue and Montgomery, and also the fact is you're pointing out that there's still a lot of the sausage making going on, even though it may be not going on inside the Senate chambers or the House chambers. There's still work being done.
Quite a bit of it. You know, again, looking at budgets, looking at prisons, looking at ways to try to figure out how, and we're limited as a state, but how to figure out ways legislatively we can assist small businesses and individuals with recovering from this pandemic.
All right. Where does it seems like it's frivolous at this point with everything going on to talk about things like lotto that have dominated the discussions you and I've had over the years, but maybe not if it's a revenue source. And is it lotto? Is it a compact with the Portage Panda Creek Indians? Is that bouncing around y'all's conversations right now?
Honestly, not in any of the conversations that I'm having. There are going to be other things that I think plug the hole from a state revenue standpoint in the form of stimulus money from the federal government. You know, you and I always talk about, you know, what's the next great aunt that's going to pass away that's going to plug the big budget hole. And forgive me to all the great aunts listening, all the wonderful people, but I feel like the state operates that way sometimes.
Like always.
But I do think that there's a good likelihood that we're going to see some federal stimulus money that comes in that props us up this time so that we're not having to rely on a lottery. I'm not shying away from a lottery conversation. You've had me on many times in support of it,
right?
But that's not going to be a requirement in order to get us out of this crisis.
So, and when you're talking about federal stimulus money, you're not talking about what's coming to the citizens of Alabama through the one-time payment or the PPP loan or something like that. You're talking about a check that comes to Montgomery.
That's correct, and it's looking like it's going to be about $1.9 billion that will be coming to the state, and that's through some federal legislation. The question is going to be how that gets divvied up, what happens to it, and oh boy, here we go, Sean, the legislature and the governor talking about spending billions again. This sounds familiar, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. $1.9 billion coming. What's total general fund budget?
General fund budget is about $2
billion. So the entirety of a general fund budget, you know, just save a little bit there, is coming in. Will it be used, do you think? What will be the battle? To grow government, to shore up more rainy day, to what will happen there? Will it be a fight to the ETF getting their part? Who makes those decisions?
Well, that is something that we're looking for a lot of guidance from Treasury on. The money is appropriated. Now it's a matter of what the guidance on spending it and how it comes to us, whether the legislature is making those decisions, whether the governor's making those decisions, whether it's some combination of the two. Is it going to be at the sole discretion of the governor? Is it going to be at the general fund committee? Is it going to be in the general fund and then budgeted through the general fund? How much of it may or may not go to affected counties and cities? There's one interesting caveat in the law that says that any political subdivision essentially of a state that has more than 500,000 people in it gets a chunk of the money up front based on population. Jefferson County is the only one in Alabama that has a number like that. So they will get their cut directly out of the state's portion. The rest is really going to be where the fight is, and that'll be very interesting.
Yes. I mean, an amount that's darn near the full general fund budget that's up for debate, it's going to be the most special of special sessions ever.
That's true, and it goes way beyond plugging a hole. It's going to be, you know, the opportunity to really fix some big ticket items if it stays at the state level, and then even if a fair amount of it goes out to our local community, states, and counties that are hurting at this time as well.
Right. I want to talk about another couple of things here. You mentioned prisons, and I read the story this morning that Governor Ivey had given, I think, another two weeks or so to these private companies for an RFP or design. Maybe RFP is not the right term at this point. Maybe it is for these prison designs. This is something you and I have been talking about for a long time. The executive branch dealing with this at one level? And explain that and your take on that, and then where would y'all in the legislative branch have to fill in if this is done?
Well, the manner in which the governor's office is proceeding with prisons is largely taking it out of the legislature's hands. I think that is a mistake. I know that a number of my colleagues do as well. Now, the governor's argument has been that this has been tried by the legislature before, during the Bentley administration, a bond issuance and a construction program for prisons, capacity program, and it failed. My counter to that is that there are a third of the legislators that are brand new from since the last time this was tried, and that she wasn't the governor the last time this was tried. So I think that we ought to be taking a swing at this, especially since bond prices right now, bond rates are so low.
Yeah.
We can borrow money as the state of Alabama so much cheaper than the private sector can. So my question is, why are we going to get more expensive money than using the bond market to borrow and to accomplish the same goal? I also do not like being at the beck and call, the mercy, if you will, of a P3. And you'll remember that term from another project. This is causing me some angst, and I think that we will likely see some problems with that as we move forward.
Why the strong pushback against doing this through the legislative branch? Why the strong push to engage in this P3 now in the case of this one in a prison? Why?
Well, unilateral action is always easier. If you can simply say, I want to do this and I'm going to do it and this is the way I'm going to do it, that's much easier than trying to build consensus and get buy-in from legislators from all across the state, all of who have different interests and different folks, constituencies that they have to represent. So I think, frankly, it's easier to simply take unilateral action than it is to build consensus and do it the other way. That can be the only reason, frankly, because it doesn't make any sense otherwise to go borrow more expensive money, pay rent for a facility you don't own, and run the inherent risks that are associated with bid proposals like this.
All right, and before we run out of time, I do want to get your take on this, because I saw you discussing this on Twitter, a discussion that maybe AL1's Congressman Bradley Byrne, when, of course, he is out of office next year, maybe a different gig here, this discussion of Secretary of the Navy, since Thomas Modley is out. What do you think about that, Bradley Byrne as Secretary of the Navy?
I love the idea. I think it would be a fantastic idea. Congressman Byrne has been a hawk. He has been dialed in on what the Navy needs, both from the industrial standpoint when we start talking about Austal here at home, but you see him at RENPEC exercises in the Far East. You see him working on Armed Services Committee, on the Sea Power Committee. I mean, he knows what the Navy needs and how to run an organization like that. By the way, he wouldn't have a problem getting confirmed, I don't think. He's very well respected on the Hill. You mentioned Modley, who was in the interim SecNav, only because the pending nomination can't get through. The nominee is currently the ambassador to Norway and is having some problems getting through the nomination process. Say what you like about Congressman Byrne, the guy's been vetted for about 20 years. There's not going to be any problem or anything that shows up that we don't already know about. And he's proven himself as a fighter for the Navy and is, I think, would be a fantastic SecNav.
All right. We'll keep that discussion going over on the Twitter feed. And once again, you all are still working, members of the legislature, in your case, of course, in the Senate. But when you gavel back in and make things official on the floor, that's just still up in the air.
Well, we are supposed to be back in on the 28th of this month. I expect that that we'll get back soon after that, if not on that exact date.
That y'all will gavel back in on the 20th. I saw that when it was set. I said, no way. You think y'all will actually go back to work on the 28th?
I think there's a good likelihood of it. As long as this thing is headed back in the right direction, I think members are anxious to get back to work. As long as we can take certain measures to keep any further spread or transmission to take place. You may not see the public invited in. It would be just fine with me if the lobbyists weren't invited back into the state house. That would be nice. But we could certainly get back to work, and I'd like to do that sooner rather than later.
There he is. State Senator Chris Elliott, as always, appreciate our discussion, and we'll check back in with you real soon.
Thanks again.
All right, Ted. The kids now are going to be upset. You're off the phone and you're back to giving them guidance.
I think they're ready for lunch now, so this actually may be a good thing for them.
All right, Ted. Thank you. Coming right back at hour number two of Midday Mobile. My buddy Bill Riles, WKRG anchor, also author. We're going to talk about his new book and his catalog of books that maybe might be right for your social distancing. You want to sit down, consume some literature. He's got some for you. Plus, I want to talk about pulling back the curtain, what it's like to work at a TV station during times of COVID-19. We'll do that as well when we return. Y'all stay right there.